On this episode of Still Loading, a mistake has been corrected. And welcome to this new episode of the Still Loading Podcast. I am your host, Josh Koval. So I have a story for you all. So in the way back ago, I was doing a series called the 40 for 40 series, where I covered 40 complete in the box NES games. And I did an episode on the games we're talking about today. Donkey Kong Classics specifically, but Donkey Kong Classics has the original Donkey Kong game and Donkey Kong Jr. That episode was 20 minutes long. And it covered both the original Donkey Kong, Donkey Kong Jr., and Double Dragon 1, three monumental games that I covered in 20 fucking minutes. That is a huge disservice to all three of those games. So I am at least redoing Donkey Kong and Donkey Kong Jr. today. And in fact, this is coming out 2 days after, I want to say, either the third or fourth anniversary of that episode being released. So this is coming out on the anniversary of that travesty that I did back when I was still learning how to podcast. And so this is a correction. And I have the perfect guest to help me fix this heinous sin, this awful wrong that I've committed. I have my dear friend, dearest Abby, on the podcast. And Abby is a competitive Donkey Kong player. Abby, how are you doing today?
I am doing so well. Thank you so much for having me on. I'm happy to be here.
Thank you for coming on. I couldn't think of a better guest for this. I'm so happy I got to know you over the last couple months through Instagram after hearing you. I mean, we interacted a little bit before you were on Gaming Memories Pod. By the way, everyone go check out Gaming Memories. He was on my show for the Shinobi episode from the summer of PS2 last year. So check that out. He's a great host, and he is it's the one true gaming podcast. He is. He's an anointed gaming prophet from Kojima the Father, Miyamoto the Father, Kojima the Son, and Carmack the Holy Ghost, or something like that. I forget his whole spiel. So, Abby, let's talk about this first. What's your history with Donkey Kong? You have a self-appointed nickname, which I think has now become more than self-appointed. So let's talk about your history with Donkey Kong.
So I started playing Donkey Kong probably 2019, early 2019, because towards the end of that year, I wanted to go into 2020 being the Queen of Kong. And that was a joke because I was so bad playing at Donkey Kong. I was the opposite of the King of Kong. And throughout playing, I decided that I actually wanted to get good, as the kids say. And become a competitive Donkey Kong player because I enjoyed the community so much. And as of today, my high score is 244,000 on Donkey Kong, which puts me in the top 50% of worldwide players and one of the top 5 female players. So I think I've earned my title as the queen.
I would definitely say so. And we're going to be going into some of these mechanics, like some of the competitive mechanics, because it's very different than just playing the game through and trying to beat it normally. There's a lot to it. And like I said, when I heard you on Gaming Memories, I was like, oh my God, this is crazy. Like some of the mechanics you're talking about just blew my mind. So I'm excited to talk about that. But before we get to that, let's get some context for this. We're going to talk about the history of Donkey Kong. So Donkey Kong was created by Shigeru Miyamoto. You know, it was his first game. He was a youngin at that time. It was his first game ever. He was a no name, which is crazy to think now after he created so many of the different gaming franchises we know today. But it was actually kind of almost an accident the way it happened. So in early 81, basically, Nintendo was trying to get its foothold in America. They brought over a bunch of arcade cabinets for this game called Radar Scope, and it fucking flopped. Like, it did not sell anything. they couldn't get it off the ground. So Nintendo of America, which was actually, I believe, run by the son-in-law of the president of Nintendo. Yes.
That's amazing.
Minoru Arakawa is the son-in-law for Hiroshi, of the president of Nintendo at the time, Hiroshi Yamauchi. And it was failing. So he went and he's like, we need a new game. Can you get a conversion kit? He asked Nintendo in Japan to make a conversion kit for Radar Scope. So that way they could salvage something out of this game because it wasn't selling at all. And that's when they tapped a young designer named Shigeru Miyamoto, and he created Donkey Kong based off of Radar Scope. So for those who don't know what a conversion kit is, it's where you take an existing arcade board and they basically slap another board on top of it and it completely modifies the game. That's a really crude way of describing it, but that's in essence what it kind of is. That's actually how Ms. Pac-Man came to be. Did you ever hear that story?
I feel like in the back of my brain that I know that, but I can't tell you the whole story about it. I hear all of these stories and I try to be like a sponge and suck up all of this information, especially about arcade games. And what it turns into is Donkey Kong was Radar Scope, and then you want to know about this one. It all piles on top of each other, and it's so much at one time. But I'd love to know more about Ms. Pac-Man.
I mean, I don't know the whole thing very well, but basically there was a bunch of kids, in like college-age kids, who were making conversion kits for existing games and just making them harder, like not completely retooling the game like you saw from Radar Scope to Donkey Kong, but basically like taking a game like Missile Command or something like that and just completely reworking it, adding new effects, making it more difficult, adding new weapons, stuff like that. So that's what they were doing. They eventually did it for Ms. Pac-Man, and it became so popular, like their business became so popular that they started getting sued by all the arcade companies, kind of understandably, because they were like making money off of their arcade games by just some modifications. So it's a long story and I don't know all of it, but that's essentially the gist of it. And there's a lot more to it after that. Like, it's crazy. That's one of the reasons why Ms. Pac-Man was so hard to determine who owns the rights to Ms. Pac-Man, because the I believe Namco created Pac-Man, but then Midway hired the guys who created Ms. Pac-Man to make Ms. Pac-Man. So who owns the right to Ms. Pac-Man when Namco owns the original property, but then Midway essentially owned the rights for the modified property? It's very strange. And that actually kind of ties into what I want to talk about next with Donkey Kong. Rights issues. Did you know, maybe you knew this, but if you didn't, let me know, that the original arcade version of Donkey Kong never saw an official exact one-to-one remake / release until 2018. The NES version is not the same as the arcade. Game Boy version, which a lot of people love, the 1994 Donkey Kong Game Boy game, is not the same game.
Right.
Whenever you saw stuff on Virtual Console, it was the NES version of Donkey Kong, not the actual arcade game. The only time up until 2018, because they released it on the Nintendo Switch with their arcade stuff, that's where you could first get it again. The only other time that you saw the actual one-to-one port of the original Donkey Kong arcade game was in Donkey Kong 64, where hidden in the game in one of the levels, there's an arcade machine and you can play the machine to get a golden banana. And that was an exact one-to-one port, but that was built from the ground up by Rare. Isn't that fucking crazy?
You know what? That's so okay. I think I knew that just by knowing that's not the real Donkey Kong, or that's not the real Donkey Kong, but I never put the pieces to word it that way until you said it. And it's like, because even I went to go play on the Atari, on the Nintendo, and it's like, well, this doesn't count. This isn't really Donkey Kong. And not until now did I really go, oh, is this a part of my kingdom that I have yet to explore? Oh my gosh. There are rocks left to be overturned.
There's a lot of stuff, man. The reason why I mention property rights and conflict and stuff like that in relation to this weird gap where like They talk about it on another podcast called Retronauts, where they did an episode, because at the time the episode came out in like 2016, I want to say. So at that point that episode was recorded, there was no other official re-release of the arcade Donkey Kong, which, think about that. The game that literally made Nintendo viable in the video game space. Like, this game is so important for so many. We'll get into some of these reasons, but this game is so fucking important, and they didn't even port the original version until 2018. And you can't really count the DK64 one because it was hidden inside the game, and also a recreation from the ground up. It wasn't an actual port. The theory is, it's never been confirmed, but back then Nintendo didn't have in-house development. They had in-house designers Shigeru Miyamoto and Gunpei Yokoi, who was the producer on the game, but there was no coding department. There wasn't like anyone to physically build the game like onto an arcade board, so they outsourced it to a company named Ikigami Tsuchinki. And when Donkey Kong hit it big, Tsuchinki, they sued Nintendo because, and it's interesting because in 89 or something like that, Japanese courts determined that game code is held under the same copyright laws, is protected under the same copyright laws as intellectual property. So Nintendo ended up settling out of court with them in the early 90s. So no one knows what they did to settle the case out of court. And many speculate that's why they didn't release it until all these years later, because Ikigami Tsuchinki was bogging down the rights. Whatever that out of court agreement was, most likely it's not official. Like, this is all speculation, but that makes the most logical sense, right?
Right.
That something in that agreement prohibited Nintendo from redistributing it without giving that company a cut of the funds. That's what people speculate. So no one really knows, like, why did it take till 2018 for Nintendo?
It sounds to me like we need to go find out if Itsugami passed away or not.
Well, the company still is operating. Ikigami Tsuchinki, they don't do game work anymore, from what I understand. They do a lot of they manufacture professional broadcast television equipment and professional video cameras and both for electronic news gathering and studio use, according to Wikipedia.
Sounds to me like they just gave up the goat and said, yeah, sure, fine, take it.
And apparently they're owned by, at least 20% of it is owned by Toshiba, which is a pretty big laptop manufacturer.
Oh, well, wow.
Electronics manufacturer. So there we go. That was a rabbit hole I wasn't expecting to go
down. Okay, cool.
I thought that was interesting, right? Like who would have thought that there was no official port for, I mean, think about that. 81 is when the game came out. July 31st, specifically, according to Wikipedia, July 31st, 1981, and 37 years. It would have been 37 years later that they finally re-released the original Donkey Kong arcade game.
Wow. Our boy's all grown up.
Holy fuck, I totally forgot. This year's the 40th anniversary of Donkey
Kong. Yeah, I was going to say July 9th was Donkey Kong's 40th birthday. And I mean, we're talking about revamps. I am so sad that Nintendo didn't do anything to celebrate Donkey Kong. Nothing. I mean, really, when you talk about Donkey Kong being a pinnacle game, without Donkey Kong, we even have a Mario? Because he started out as Jumpman.
Mm-hmm.
He wasn't Mario at first. And even when playing Donkey Kong Jr., somewhere between Donkey Kong and Donkey Kong Jr., it was probably Super Mario Brothers, came out, they started addressing Jumpman as Mario. So here's this huge big character, and we're not even going to address his background. We're not going to talk about it.
It's so fucking wild. And Chris Kohler he's not at IGN anymore. He was at Gamma. I don't know where he was for a while, but he is actually working now for a company called Digital Clips. But he talks about how important this game is for game narratives. up until this point, as simple as the narrative of this game is, and a little sexist, there was no narratives in this game. Mario is trying to save Pauline.
Pauline.
Mario is trying to save Pauline from Donkey Kong. And he is climbing up a building that's under construction because Donkey Kong has kidnapped her and has climbed up the building, and he has to go rescue her. Like, that's the story. There's nothing more, nothing less to it. Though I did see that the game was apparently inspired by Popeye,
yes,
which kind of makes sense because you have Popeye as Mario, you have Pauline as Olive Oil, and you have Donkey Kong as Bluto.
Right.
It's kind of like it's playing off that. And apparently the license for it fell through, so they ended up doing this. And eventually they did make a Popeye game later on, but this was not it. There's a little bit more to this backstory I want to talk about. It's going to be relatively short, this portion, but this game took Nintendo to court. They got sued by Universal for this game. The reason being is King Kong and Donkey Kong are very similar, and Nintendo won. And they flaunted it heavily at the time. Yes. And it was because the way they won is that they hired this lawyer. I believe his name was John Kirby. I know his last name was Kirby. Yes, his name was John Kirby, though. And John Kirby successfully argued in court that, well, Universal was sued for Donkey Kong at one point in time, and they won their argument by basically saying, well, Donkey Kong is like the story aspects in Donkey Kong are under public domain, therefore we shouldn't be sued because it's public domain. And so he's like, you argued that this movie is public domain, essentially. You argued that the plot elements of this movie is fair use under public domain, so therefore you can't sue us either. And the judge sided with them. They won the lawsuit, and that's how it was. Now, John Kirby, to thank him, Nintendo, I actually learned something else from at least from Wikipedia, so I'm not 100% certain how accurate this is. I would have to look up the citation. Nintendo thanked John Kirby with a gift of a $30,000 sailboat named Donkey Kong and exclusive worldwide rights to use the name for sailboat. So he could name any sailboat he wanted Donkey Kong. How about that?
Wow.
And later on, Nintendo named a protagonist after him in his honor. Kirby.
How cute. I love that. Imagine having your name immortalized as this cute little pink bubble.
But think
I would not be
too
mad about that.
How could they not honor Donkey Kong for his 40th anniversary when even because of a fucking lawsuit from it, we have not that Kirby didn't exist, but we have the name. We have that iconic name. Like, come on, man. Like, I don't get Nintendo's decision making with this. It makes no sense.
I have a thought process what they'll do hopefully in the future. I see that Pauline has undergone a total transformation. She is no longer blonde. She is this beautiful brunette, and she's becoming more and more prominent as playable characters in more recent Switch games. I think the most recent being Super Mario Galaxy Golf? Skull? I know it's a golf game.
It's the new Mario Golf game, yeah.
And she is a playable character in that. So my hope is that Pauline will have evolved from this damsel in distress to hopefully maybe one day she'll have her own game. I would love that.
She shows up in Mario Odyssey as well.
Yes, she does. And she has an entire backstory. Mm-hmm. I would chuckle so much if they went from this damsel in distress to maybe her having her own rhythm-based game, because she is singing in that game.
Mm-hmm.
And they made part of her backstory that she's a jazz singer now. So that would be fun. And when was the last time Nintendo released a rhythm-based game? I can't think.
They made a Mario DDR game.
Okay, that's fun.
For the GameCube. It was a port of it. I love that she also is the one that sings Jump Up Superstar.
Isn't
that song
cute?
That song, legit, the first time I heard this, I'm like, what the fuck? Did Mario go anime on me? And I love anime, but it was so anime, I was like, it took me out of it. And now, though, I like watch it, I'm like, I fucking love Jump Up Superstar. Like,
it's so
I
want
to listen to it all the time now. It's so happy. It's so catchy. Maybe if I can find a remix that I can use for this, I might use a remix of Jump Up Superstar as like the end music for this episode.
Oh, if fun. I know that the Living Tombstone did it, but I think it's still copyrighted.
Yeah, so I don't know if I could really use that then. I mean, I'm not, all my videos are not monetized, so maybe they won't care.
Maybe.
I don't know. But anyway, so that's some of the background with how Donkey Kong came to be. It was, you know, kind of a mishap, and they needed a hit real fast, and so they turned Radar Scope into Donkey Kong. It put Shigeru Miyamoto on the map. It put Nintendo on the map. You wouldn't have Nintendo as we know it now without Donkey Kong. It really revolutionized storytelling in games. As weird as that sounds, for as simple of a story that it is, there was no stories. The only stories you really had were stories that players imprinted onto the games themselves. I always remember hearing, especially people older than both of us, talking about like Space Invaders and how they imagined like this whole backstory of like why they were defending Earth from these Space Invaders. But there wasn't anything shown in the game for that. In Donkey Kong, it literally starts off, it has a little jingle, and you see Donkey take Pauline away, and you have to go after her. Now, I'm awful at this game. I am objectively bad at both Donkey Kong, Donkey Kong Jr. I'm bad at Pac-Man, since we were talking about that before. I'm bad at all of this. So now that we've covered a lot of the groundwork for this, the floor is yours, Abby. Let's talk about competitive Donkey Kong play. What do you got?
It is not for the weak-minded. If you're going to commit to competitively playing, you need to commit to learning the rules, learning the patterns, and learning to take a loss after loss after loss. Mm-hmm. So when I first started learning to play, again, I always joked about how terrible I was, because it isn't an easy game to begin learning, because there are so many factors within the game itself. So, to give a basic outline of the game, there are 4 different stages. In total, there are 22 levels. Each level has a different number of stages. So, like you said before, you are chasing after Donkey Kong, and when you get higher in the level, there's going to be more stages per level.
Mm-hmm.
Or, yes, more stages per level.
Now, when you say stages, do you mean like different screens, or do you mean like individual like the girders that you have to climb up?
Correct. Different screens. So you
different screens. Wow.
Right. And there's 4 different like types.
80 some odd different screens then?
I think, I could be wrong, but that sounds right. I'm not exactly sure how many boards you have to pass in order to kill screen the game, but it's a lot. You can replay the same barrel board and still be on the same level. So once you encounter level 1, you're going to have to pass a barrel board and a rivet board. After you finish those 2 boards, you move on to level 2. That will have a barrel board, a spring board, and a rivet board. And it's a different repeating pattern, and it builds on top of each other. So you can kind of get in the habit of learning what board will be coming up next.
Mm-hmm.
The trick with it is, once you reach either level 4 or level 5, the randomness in the game no longer exists. There's still small amounts of randomness when it comes to the pattern that the barrels are falling down, or the way that the fireballs or the firefoxes follow you throughout the game. But you have far more control over the way that you can maneuver and manipulate a lot of the factors in the game, making it easier for you to control the outcome of your score. So when you're playing competitively, obviously you want to get a higher score. You want to do better. There's things that you can do called point press. You can do things called barrel grouping. You can do things like backwards jumping off of a wall to catch a hammer so you can start smashing barrels for more points.
Oh, wow.
It's really the craziest thing to see some of these people do that. I am not nearly as advanced enough to do those things, but to know that these players can process that information that quickly is outrageous to me. I think it's phenomenal to watch some of it happen. So when playing, again, I started out not so good. It probably took me at least a year not actively playing to be able to break 100,000 points. And that's the first trick because, again, we talked about the randomness of patterns. There's a board called the springboard. Well, the first time you encounter the springboard, it is a preset pattern. Second time you encounter the springboard, the springs are moving a little bit faster and you can get away with a not as aggressive pattern when moving Jumpman beyond the springs to be able to reach the top of the level. But by the third time, and from that point forward, anytime you encounter the springboard, there is something called a spring theory. That theory is that when the springs exit the left side of the screen and pass all the way through to the right side, they exit in 15 different patterns. Imagine that little bitty teeny tiny space, those pixels have 15 different variations, and your brain has to begin to recognize which pattern is safe for you to move on. Because once you lose a life, you're down. You're down. You're not going to get much further. And the third time you encounter that springboard is around 80,000 points. I could be wrong. I think it's at the end of level 3 you see it. And that it is the same difficulty until the kill screen of the game. You have to master that piece before you can get any further in that game. Because if you don't master that level, you're not going to break 100,000. You're not going to break 200 or anything else.
That's nuts.
It is.
How long does a run, like if you were trying to go for to PB, if you're trying to PB your high score, how long does it normally take for a full playthrough?
For me, if I start to finish around, let's say 250,000, I want to say that's probably an hour, an hour and a half. And that could be me exaggerating because it feels like that long. But when I've highlighted clips on Twitch, I always feel like it's a good bulk of time. And it's never things rapidly progressing through that hour. It's always repeated over and over and over again. For someone who's a far more advanced player, I want to say that you can kill screen the game with several hours. I feel like five.
Wow.
Might be the 5 or 6. But you have to take into account things like they're doing things like point pressing. They're using their maximum amount of time per level to be able to group barrels together to get those extra points. They're spending their time in parts of the board where you can jump firefoxes without being killed. So they're using more of that time versus somebody who's playing just to finish the game.
Yeah.
So they have to do more and it takes them longer. Yeah.
I'm just picturing like I can't, and you're standing that whole time if you're playing in an arcade cabinet, like you
who's
know
standing. I'm not standing. I have a nice chair.
A smart move. Because oh my god, just thinking about that though, that's like I don't have enough of attention span anymore to sit. Like I'll stream a game for like 2 hours and be like, all right, is it time? Like I just want to stop now. I'm good. Like this is fun, but like there's very few games now that really hook me. So I can only imagine that's so much patience and dedication. Like you were saying, it's not for the faint of heart. Like you really have to commit time.
And absolutely.
Like you could be the best player in the world at it. Like you could be like a natural born Donkey Kong player. It's still going to take so much time to learn those mechanics. I remembered on Gaming Memories, you talked about like double and triple barrel jumps. So could you go into that fast? Could you talk about that a little bit more?
Sure. So if you've ever played Donkey Kong, you know that he's throwing barrels all the way down and there's the stairs or ladders that you have to come across. Well, once you hit either the fourth or fifth level of the game, when the randomness is gone, when you are headed towards a ladder or jump man, the barrels will immediately fall down the ladder that you're facing. Or if you're headed towards a direction, if a barrel is just before it would be by a ladder, if you quickly press Jumpman left or right, whichever way you would choose, the barrel will fall down that ladder. So if you see two or three barrels that are falling down in a consecutive row, you can control one to go down right after another. Or if you're trying to avoid them, you can control them in the opposite direction of you. But if you're trying to double jump or group barrels, you obviously wouldn't want them in a different direction. I'm trying to explain this. I'm thinking
out loud. Well, from the way you kind of described it on the gaming memories, is that essentially players who are super skilled, like you said, you can manipulate the barrel movements. And so the really high-end players will manipulate the barrel movements so that way, instead of just one barrel coming down a ladder, it'll be two or three stacked on top of each other. So when it gets to you as Jumpman slash Mario, when you jump over that one quote-unquote barrel, it's actually three. You just can't tell visually because they're all stacked on top of each other, and you get an obscene amount of points for it.
Yes. I think it's 100 for a regular jump, 300 for two, 500 for three, and then, or it's 800 for something. But the funny thing about when it says 800, it's really not 800 points. It's always 500. There's something within the programming about it says 800 points, but you're not getting that. You're only getting 500 points. It's pretty weird.
Well, that's rude.
I know, right? Imagine my frustration. Yes. So imagine Jumpman is further down the level, and you can kind of watch where the barrels are going. And if you're at a point where you can control, say the first barrel comes down and you can kind of ignore that one and let it do its thing. And then the second one comes along and you can have him take shortcuts down ladders further so that they can meet the first one further down towards the bottom. So you kind of have to time the barrels appropriately in order to have them line up. It's not like you can see two in a row and you just go bloop bloop and they land on top of each other.
Yeah, he doesn't throw them that close next, like that close in a line. Like,
no, it's
so
all
you really have to like manipulate the hell out of it.
Yeah. And it's, again, that is a skill for players far better than I, and I am explaining it to the best of my ability because it's not a skill that I have been able to learn yet, and I'm sure people who are better than me are probably going, that's not how you do it at all.
Hey man, like the thing is that you can at least, like, I think what's fascinating about this to me is that I've never listened to anyone be able to describe, well, not be able to, but anyone who has described competitive arcade mechanics. Like, I see you know, mechanics in, whether it's, you know, like profession, like esports stuff, or whether it's speed running. But when it comes to arcade games, there's very little like public. I'm sure you can easily go to a forum board, talk to some of the high end competitors, high end runners, and they'll be happy to help you. But I haven't seen something on a really big mainstream stage about this. And I think it's kind of a crime because this is really interesting to me, because the idea of like you were saying, doing an off the wall jump into a hammer to grab the, so they can grab the hammer and then work their way through a stage. Like, I feel like there could be some really fun either tutorials or like showcases done at like speedrunning events for this. I think this would be a really interesting thing to watch, because when I play Donkey Kong, I'm awful at it. Like, I don't have the patience or the know-how to really sit down and learn it. So when I hear you talking about it, I'm like, oh my God, I want to go fucking play this game. I want to learn how to do it.
Yes. And I would be happy to pass the Donkey Kong curse on to you.
I just need an arcade cabinet. Right, I'll just get MAME. I'll get MAME for practice. I'm not planning on submitting any runs.
Mm-hmm. I said the same thing.
Oh no.
The curse has begun.
Are there any other mechanics though that we haven't talked about? Is there anything else that like even if it's not any the mechanic specifically, maybe just some aspects of competitive Donkey Kong play we haven't talked about yet.
So there's other things. Instead of barrel control, there's the fire foxes that you kind of have to avoid. They do things like freezing, and they freeze for a certain amount of time. And the length of time that you hold your hammer for is how long it's active in your hands. So those are things that are very important to memorize when learning to play. There's a stage, the rivet stage. It's the second stage of the very first level. So if you've seen the blue with the little yellow rivets in between, mm-hmm. that's the one that I'm talking about. And there's a specific pattern that some people run. I run it, and it will help you trap the fire foxes on one side of the level. That way, when you have the hammer and you smash them, they spawn on the opposite side of the level out of your way. Okay. And that's something that people don't. If you were to just go play right now and I didn't teach you that pattern, you'd be like, oh, they're spawning all over the place. I don't know what to do. Learning that type of thing is going to help you become a better player because you can manipulate the board better. You can move around faster. You can go, okay, I know I have my hammer for a total of 8 seconds. I need to make sure that these guys come down in that time frame to smash them and get them the heck out of here so that I can run up and save my girl Pauline.
When you're determining how good a run's going to be, obviously you said the bulk of the points are earned once you can start manipulating the boards. Because, like you said, the first 4 levels are mostly random, and then after yes. that, so it's once you get to stage 2.
It's level 4. So before you reach level 4, level 1 has 2 stages. Level one has 2 stages. Level 2, I think, has 2 stages. Level 3 has 3 stages. Level 4 has 4 stages. And then you continue repeating those until you get to level 22.
Okay. So the first 4 stages are random. But then once you get past those first 4 stages and all those different screens, it starts to become more reliable. It's
correct.
Okay. There's a lot less RNG involved.
Yes. Okay. And that is much easier to process. And that was something that I didn't realize until I actually broke my new high score. I keep chuckling at myself like, oh my God, the game becomes so much easier. And that's not to discredit the difficulty of the game, but it is so much easier to process when you can say, I'm going to get these barrels out of here. I'm going to control them out. Mm-hmm. It's almost like managing the game versus the game managing you. You begin yes. to actually play the game so that you can continue successfully versus you just trying to figure out what the heck is going on.
So the question I'm trying to ask then is, how much of your score is determined by those random levels, by those first 4 stages where it's a lot more RNG heavy and you have less control over it? Like, do you just hope for good RNG and you get higher scores for that? So that way when you can manipulate those higher end ones that... those areas, like the higher levels, will be much more consistent, like you said. So you can pretty much rely on, you can pretty much get a good idea, like, all right, I'm going to get this many points in this stage and this many points in this stage because I can manipulate this now. Versus in those first 4 stages, you can't manipulate shit. So you have to just hope that you're getting good RNG and giving you a good score. So does that really play in heavily, or is that more of a kind of like, we just kind of work our way through it quickly and then let our skill take over in the latter half?
A lot of playing Donkey Kong has to do with hoping for good RNG. You always want to have good RNG. And good RNG means... there's not wild barrels flying at you, or when you're climbing a ladder, it doesn't mean the firefox is going to chase after you. A lot of your points come from time bonus in the game. You want to be able to finish a level faster, because if you waste your time doing things like holding a hammer, but you're not smashing barrels, all you did was waste your time. So that's less points that you're accumulating for that. A lot of people like to say, when I finish this level, I want to be at 6,000 points. When I finish this stage, I want to be at 6,000 points. When I finish this stage, I want to be at 10,000 points. So you can tell, okay, I'm having a good game because I've reached level 4 and I've already hit over 100,000 points. So once you can manipulating your barrels better. You can begin point pressing in better places. You can start saying, okay, some people have something called a pace chart, and they say by level 12, I want to have this many points. And it keeps them, okay, I need to earn an extra 10,000 points before I end this stage so that I'm on pace with my 1,000,000-point score. That's how some of the really good players do it. For me, I know that once I've hit a certain board, if I have 3 lives in queue, I know that I'm doing good. I know that I've hit the threshold of the game. I'm making it sound really dramatic, and it's not.
Hey, you're trying to save Pauline, man. This is serious shit.
This is so serious, but also I need my points, okay? I need the fireboxes to come down, and I always joke about it because I always say I'm never going to hurt them. I just want to talk, okay? I just want to have this glowing hammer. I'm not going to hurt you. I only want to talk about why you're chasing me around this board, okay?
You started this.
This is all your fault. You were asking for this. So a lot of the points come from your time bonus. You want to be able to finish a level quickly. And that's – each player is different. There are some players who choose not to point press. They are just finishing the boards as quickly as possible. That way they can get to their kill screen faster.
Mm-hmm.
So the tricky part about playing Donkey Kong is that there are only 21 complete levels for the game. Once you hit level 22, the game does not have enough coding, and it ends shortly thereafter once it begins. Mm-hmm. So you can reach level 22, and you want to make sure that you don't have to have any men left. You can be on your last guy, but you will die on level 22 because that's it. The game was not designed to go beyond that point because I guess they thought people weren't going to be able to do it. So the ultimate goal when playing competitively is you want to get your kill screen. That's like, you have beaten this game. Kong did not defeat you this time. You got it. From there, a full successful kill screen game usually ends at about anywhere from, I want to say, 750,000 points to maybe 900,000 points. That's a pretty big gap. But once you hit there, 1,000,000 points isn't that much further. So what you have to do, that's when you really begin your point pressing. That's really begin trying to finish your levels faster, your barrel grouping. Those things become more important because you have to accumulate all of those points within the time frame of the game.
Mm-hmm.
And you don't get any extra. You get one extra life at 7,000 points. That tells you how far they didn't think people were going to be able to make it in that game. Because if the game continued to give lives, it wouldn't be as much of a challenge once you got to level 12 and you knew, oh, okay, I'm about 400,000 points. I know I'm going to get an extra life soon, right?
Yeah.
That would only continue to play further, but they didn't. They stopped at 4 guys total. And once you hit that, that's it.
I did not know that. I had no idea that you it maxed out at 4. I had no idea. What a dick move.
Like, yeah, right?
Wow. Wow. Okay. That's fucking wild. So before we move on to Donkey Kong Jr., let's talk about King of Kong. We'll just kind of touch on this. King of Kong, and this is actually hard. Before we dive into that, I completely forgot to mention, for those who don't know, we were talking about RNG before. RNG means random number generator, which in gaming terms means random bullshit. You can't control it. You don't. It's a level of unknowability for you as a player. So RNG is just the randomness that games throw at you. Everything else, speedrunners and competitive players like Abby here are able to break down. And like you were mentioning with the springs, there's 15 different patterns those springs could come down in. That's a little bit of RNG because you don't know what it's going to be, but you know that it's 15 different possible patterns. So once you see it, they can account for it right away because they know the 15 different patterns. So, but RNG is like, those patterns don't exist. You know, they're going to come somewhere. You don't know where. So just as a quick primer on what RNG is. So King of Kong, King of Kong, I have not watched this. Abby, you have. It is a documentary-ish sort of movie about this, about professional Donkey Kong playing between the one-time world champion Billy Mitchell and at the time world champion Billy Mitchell and a new, not, I don't know, how new was Steve Wiebe? He was an up-and-comer at the time.
I think so. And here's the thing that my favorite King of Kong fails to mention is that when it was being filmed, it makes it seem like it's only these two guys going head-to-head in this, right? Yeah. It's really not. There's hundreds of people that are playing worldwide. They just chose to highlight these two guys. So while it's like, oh, everybody's so excited, these two guys are doing it, it's a really... Meanwhile, there's somebody in Australia who's been practicing for the past 6 hours. Like, are we going to talk about me over here or what?
Yeah, yeah.
But it does. It highlights Steve Wiebe and my man Billy Mitchell.
You're a big Billy Mitchell fan. We're not going to be throwing shade at anyone. Just know that Billy Mitchell's a polarizing figure in competitive Donkey Kong play. Some competitive players despise the man. You, Abby, happen to be a fan of the man. This podcast is not going to be diving into the politics of that. If you want to know why Billy Mitchell is disliked, do some research. I don't want to go into it, but I have Abby. I trust Abby's opinion. Abby likes Billy Mitchell. She says that he is a good person. So you know what? I haven't met the man myself, so I will, if I ever get to meet him, I hope I do. I'd love to see what he is actually like and not just let the internet stories persuade my opinion. So
good for you.
I want to get that out there because Billy Mitchell, like we were talking about off mic, he's a polarizing figure in the gaming space. So I'm not here to talk about any of the drama, any of the gossip. That's not my shtick. I don't cover that bullshit. So
good.
We will say though that King of Kong does make Billy look like an asshole. But it was on purpose because they needed some sort of an antagonist, from my understanding. Like, I know a lot about this considering I have not watched the fucking thing.
So I'm going to need you to watch it, okay?
I will report back to you when I do. Maybe I'll watch it tomorrow. Maybe my wife and I will watch it together tomorrow because I think it's so on YouTube.
Good. It is on YouTube. And there's, like I said it off camera, I'm going to say it again. There's so many good one-liners in that movie. You could just watch it and you'll be quoting it forever. Forever. I say things like when I answer the phone, oh, World Records Headquarters.
World Records Headquarters.
It's so no one would answer silly. That's so it's dumb. But that's when you watch it, you'll hear it and you'll go, oh, that's what that is. And you just chuckle to yourself. My favorite thing about it is that clearly Billy is a confident guy. Not everybody enjoys seeing confident people. I just love the whole dynamic between everybody in the cast. Just watch it.
I'll have to check it out.
Just watch it. Opinions aside, it's a good laugh. And if you're a fan of gaming, it's just a staple that has to be seen.
It's a really it's a talked about documentary. A lot of people like this documentary, even outside the gaming space. I was listening to another podcast who was saying like their wife, who is not a gamer, watched it and loved it. So maybe my wife will too. We'll see. We'll see how it goes. It's a documentary about Steve Wiebe going up against trying to break Billy Mitchell's world record. Am I correct?
Along those lines, I think that's the way that they set it up. And one thing to keep, if you're going to watch it, keep in the forefront of your mind is that it wasn't just those two people playing, because the way they set it up makes it seem like it's just them, but it really isn't.
There's a whole community of people.
It's an entire community. So if your wife watches it and she feels inspired to play, tell her I'm a girl to help her.
I will. I will let her know. I've talked to her about you saying like, yeah, she's the queen of Kong. She's a competitive Donkey Kong player. So that I just wanted to kind of talk about that because it's an important documentary.
It really
highlighted the competitive scene, and I would argue it probably brought a lot of people to the competitive scene. Did it bring
for sure,
or did you discover it before that?
Absolutely. It wasn't until when I first started dating my husband, actually, we met at an arcade tournament, and I wasn't playing at the time, but we would chit chat, and I'd say, well, what are you practicing for this week, and he would have his select games that he would be playing. And somewhere along the way, I wanted to play. And as a date night, we chose to watch King of Kong. And again, it's predominantly men featured in the gaming community. And I was bitter and jealous that he wasn't spending time with me. So I said, well, fine, if you want to be that way, I'm going to learn to play the games too. And I would play the games that he was playing in his competitions, and I would try to get good at them too. That's and funny. We said, well, we'll watch King of Kong. We watched it. It was inspiring to me. And another one that's really good is the Nibbler documentary. Have you seen that one?
No, I've never even heard of this.
I don't remember the title of it, but it's all about a marathon player kill screening, or at least getting a world record for the game Nibbler. And if you've ever played that game, it's essentially Snake. You have to slither all around the board.
It's called Man vs. Snake, the yes. Long and Twisted Tale of Nibbler. It's free on YouTube right now and on Amazon Prime Video and on Tubi. So there we go. Sorry, I just looked it up. I'll check it. It's rated really highly, 7 out of 10 on IMDb and 89% on Rotten Tomatoes. Billy Mitchell's in it. Your boy, Billy yes. Mitchell's in it.
It's good. It's another one. That one, I think, focuses solely on one player. And then there's another documentary. I can't think of the name of it. I want to say maybe it was about Missile Command. Mm-hmm. The guy trying to get the world record, or at least the personal best for Missile Command. That's another good documentary. And there was a documentary about Richie Knuckles Arcade. He's another big name in the Donkey Kong community. And I think he hosted a Kong Off at his arcade. And that was really fun to watch, too. I love documentaries.
I'll have to check these out. Have you ever heard of, there's a couple, well, actually one. Have you ever heard of the YouTube channel NoClip?
No, I haven't. What's that?
That is, it's fan-funded, and it covers more modern games. Like Horizon Zero Dawn was one they did.
Okay.
They also recently did one on the Demon's Souls remake for PS5. But they get interviews with game developers, and they fly all over the world, and they do these really well done, like sometimes mini documentaries, sometimes full hour long ones. The Horizon Zero Dawn one is like a full hour where they interview like some of the higher ups at Guerrilla Games and stuff like that. NoClip is a fantastic YouTube channel, completely free to watch. Definitely recommend that. There's a lot of video game documentarians like the gaming historian. You might have heard of him.
Yes, it sounds
YouTube.
Very
he's
familiar.
He's pretty big. There's a really good one. It is not a YouTube channel, but it's a documentary called Not for Resale.
Okay.
And it's about basically talking about the transition we're in right now of digital to physical media, physical to digital media.
Ooh.
Talking about like the pros and cons and both. And honestly, it's weighed pretty fairly, because they interview a lot of game store owners talking about how like their whole business is based off of physical media. And when that goes away, what is their business going to be like? Are they going to be there forever, or is it going to be something where they know they have a shelf life? And then they also talk to game devs who succeeded because of digital distribution. For example, like they talk about like Minecraft would not have, there's no way you could have pitched that to a developer. There's no way you could pitch that to a publisher or to a retailer to put an 8-bit looking 3D game on store shelves and hope to sell. But because it was released digitally and it had this grassroots movement to the point where Microsoft bought it, like digital distribution created Minecraft. We wouldn't have Minecraft without it. They also talk about Rocket League is another example where that wouldn't have existed without digital distribution. So they talk about the pros and cons of it, and how, like, what about people who don't have good access to internet or access to good internet? It's a really good documentary. Pat Contry, who is the guy who produced it, he's like Pat the NES Punk, if you ever heard of him. Yeah, you can buy the Blu-ray on his website, The Punk Effect, or Contry. You could Google Country Code Productions.
Right.
And you can buy the Blu-ray for like $23.
He's supposed to be coming to Houston next weekend after.
Actually, do you remember also, do you remember those VH1 movies or VH1 shows, the I Love the 80s, I Love the 70s, I Love the 90s? They, Pat Contry and his friends, this was in the early 2010s, they did a series called The Video Game Years, and it was done in that style where they kind of have a bunch of gaming personalities on, and they pick a game, and then they kind of talk about the game, and it's filmed like it's something straight out of VH1's I Love the 80s, right?
Yeah, so each person gets their own little blurb talking about
it's not the game. Even like that. It's like they just have a game and then people just jump in. I will send you a link after the video.
Yes!
They do it like they do hour-long episodes that are, and they cover a year. I think it starts at like 78 and goes up to 1989. They stopped after 89 just because it was a lot of work. And now Pat said he's never going to go back to it. One, because it's a lot of work, and two, like that style of video isn't popular anymore. So that it'd be hard for him to get new followers and make it worth his while, type of thing.
Well, meanwhile, everybody else that enjoyed it is just left in the dumps.
I mean, you can still watch. I think they actually are. He's releasing them on YouTube currently for free. They were off of YouTube for a while, but I think they're back up. I'll send you a link after we're done recording.
Okay.
So anyway, those are just some of my recommendations. You said you like documentaries, so
I really do. Thank you.
So let's talk about Donkey Kong Jr. Donkey Kong Jr. is the sequel to Donkey Kong. Go figure. And actually, it's a little surprising. You would think you'd just call it Donkey Kong 2, but no, Donkey Kong Jr. And it's a complete role reversal. Instead of Mario saving Pauline, this time Mario's the villain. It's the only time Mario is a villain in any game. He has kidnapped Donkey Kong, and Donkey Kong's son has to come and save him. That's kind of a dark twist.
It's so sad.
I know, right? It makes it hurts a little bit. It hurts me a little bit.
My poor Kong gets no love anyway, so it's fine. I'll allow it.
So the gameplay, I think what's interesting about this to me is it's so different from Donkey Kong in terms of gameplay. Like, it's close enough where you're like, I see why they're the same series, but it's nothing like the primary mechanic in Donkey Kong, in the original Donkey Kong, is jumping, hence Jumpman, right?
Right.
We didn't even fucking talk about this. It's the original platformer. It's like the original platformer game. In this one, climbing is the mechanic, and they do a cool job of creating mechanics out of climbing, which I didn't really think about. How, like, if you have, you can climb up a vine, and Junior will climb up, and you have to dodge the things that are either flying on the screen or Mario's throwing at you. But if there's another vine nearby, you can straddle the two, you can straddle midair and grab it with both, and you can climb up a lot faster. But now you're exposed to more because you're grabbing onto two different vines. So you have to really prioritize. You have to really strategize, like, do I want to get up this really fast and hope I don't get hit? Or do I go up a lot slower? And it's a big fucking difference. Like, it's totally different.
I played a little bit last night, and it was so awkward because, again, it is a strategy, and you have to actually learn how to play the game, and there are so many things happening on screen at one time versus Donkey Kong, where it's okay, I know I am battling barrels on this level, or I am battling fire foxes on this level. For Donkey Kong Jr., you've got these crazy alligator looking things, or these giant birds, or even their eggs are flying at you, or don't forget, you're floating over water. That's gonna kill you too. There's a lot of things happening in Donkey Kong Jr. that were not even remotely close to Donkey Kong, and I guess that's good because not sequels don't always have to be the same or a copycat of their original. It's good that they went in a different direction, but I'm not a fan of Donkey Kong Jr. I'm going to say that. Those are fighting words.
Okay. You're a competitive Donkey Kong player. Like, it makes sense. Like, it's not your cup right. of tea.
And again, I don't like change. We talked about this before.
We talked about this off mic. Yeah.
Scary. I don't like change.
This is stranger danger. Get out of here.
Yes.
I'm just picturing you throwing like the Donkey Kong Jr. cartridge. Like, you're stranger danger.
Get this away from me.
Police 911. I have a new, I have a strange cartridge in my house. I could see that. See, for me, the reason I like these games both equally, because I don't have the emotional connection to Donkey Kong like you do. I don't really have much of emotional connection to either of these because I didn't play these growing up. I've played them, but I didn't play. It wasn't like something that I played frequently, right? Played the original Donkey Kong a lot more than I ever played this, though, because I actually had Donkey Kong 64 growing up, and I got to that arcade cabin.
Oh, wow.
It's not like it's hidden away, but it's like it's still tucked into the game. It's not like it, you can see it within the first 20 minutes. You have to play an hour or two to get to the spot where it's at,
mm-hmm.
Unless you're a speedrunner and just break the game. But what I like about Donkey Kong Jr. actually is the visuals. I really love the visuals of this game. Like, the colors are really appealing. In the original Donkey Kong, it's very striking. It's still appealing, but it's just red girders the whole right. time, right? I guess, and then the rivets that you can like walk over, and then you have to jump over later type
sure,
of thing.
Sure, yeah.
But with this, it's a lot. There's a lot more variety to color. You actually kind of see the origins of like some of Mario's terrain, like especially the first
yes.
level. There's got these islands with these green mushroom tipped islands. They're not mushrooms, but they kind of mushroom out like a mushroom does.
Right.
And it kind of reminds me of stuff that you would see in Mario Brothers. And you can kind of see the design elements starting there a little bit. I'm not saying they, you know, Mario was inspired by these design elements, but it kind of looks similar. So I wonder, you know, like, could it have been?
I think that's maybe when they really started narrowing down on the niche of when Mario is involved in a game, it is going to look kind of like this, right? So that's like immediately right off the bat, whenever we plugged the game and we started to play, I saw that. And I said, this looks really familiar. I know I've seen this before. Mm-hmm. And the colors are, because there are so many on screen at one time, it's like, this is different for an arcade game. There are so many things. There's a purple on the same time as green, on the same time as yellow, as orange. That's mm-hmm. a lot going on. And even Donkey Kong Jr., the way that he's pixelated, I mean, he's a junior, so he's got his little diaper shorts on.
Mm-hmm.
The way that they have that is so crafty. It's so beautifully done, and I wish I enjoyed it more than I did.
There's nothing wrong with that. Like, it's the mechanics, it's so strange because it's like it's supposed to be a sequel, but the mechanics are so different from Donkey Kong. I would actually say the platforming in this is significantly harder than from what I would play in
Donkey
Kong. Like the even just the first, looking at the first screen, I literally am looking at the first screen right now. There is very tight jumps on the bottom screen. So like if you fall, like in the original Donkey Kong, unless you walk off the side, you're not dying.
Right.
You know what I mean? With this, you can literally walk to the center of the screen and die because there's just holes everywhere. To be fair, they focus on verticality and climbing versus jumping. I guess mm-hmm. original Donkey Kong also is verticality because you're climbing up. But this, you know, that climbing mechanic
right.
is the core mechanic of the game. But it's still very... The platforming seems a lot more unforgiving, and while it's cool, I love the visuals of it, and I love that they took such a risk on the gameplay. It is just, it's so far, like it's hard to imagine it being in the Donkey Kong series other than like if it wasn't for the Donkey Kong characters, I don't think this would be, you wouldn't be able to tell this was supposed to be a sequel.
Correct. Right. Without Mario in his classic Jumpman outfit, I don't mm-hmm. think that it would fit as a Donkey Kong game at all. I think that's probably one of the only thing, aside from Donkey Kong itself. You could put something else in place of Donkey Kong, and it would easily be a totally different game.
Mm-hmm.
You could put because birds are enemies in this game. I don't know what you would put there. A cat. And it would still function, but it is that easily removed from the Donkey Kong series.
Apparently, some of the things that, like, a lot of the ideas that they couldn't fit into the original Donkey Kong were used in this. They had come up with several ideas to and full complete levels, but didn't fit into the game due to different constraints. Reading this off of Wikipedia, just paraphrasing a bit, and Miyamoto eventually fleshed these concepts out and put them into this, and they wanted Donkey to be the star of this, but because his sprite was so big, they didn't have the technology right at the time to make him a main character, so it seems like they went with Junior for this. What I did find was interesting is that there's, in the different versions, there are four levels, and they appear in the sequence of 1, 2, 3, 4, and then just repeat. But that was the Japanese version. In the US version, you had levels 1 through 4, then 1, 2, 4, then 1, 3, 4, and then 1, 2, 3, 4, and repeating from there on out. Like, that's kind of weird how, like, they did the normal, or I guess it was just 1 and 4 were the first, like, the first two screens are levels 1 and 4. Then the next three screens are 1, 2, 4. And the next three screens are 1, 3, 4.
That's very similar to Donkey Kong, where you start the level, you finish the level, and then you move on to the next level. The first screen is the beginning of the level, and then there's another stage, and then you finish the level. So every time you finish the level, it is going to be the same ending screen.
The same beginning and ending screen, but correct, there is a new middle one, and then they bring it, then they put it all together. In the Japanese version, apparently in the original Japanese for Donkey Kong as well, it was just 1, 2, 3, 4 the whole way. Like, there was no weird variations.
I think in the very original release of Donkey Kong 2, Pauline was supposed to yell, "Help! Help!"
Really?
Yeah, and I think Jumpman, when he jumped, he was supposed to say something else too, but it ended up being replaced with the sound now that he that makes whatever he's jumping over. A barrel.
The boom, or yeah, whatever. Or no, the dun-dun-dun, that sound.
Yes.
So real quick, not related to Donkey Kong Jr., but it's something I, since we're talking about different versions of Donkey Kong games, the original Donkey Kong, the NES version, what the differences were is that it skipped a stage. It skipped a full stage in the NES version. There were some compromises to the stage layouts for the, because, you know, TVs are, had the home TVs had a very different shape and resolution than arcade monitors. And it doesn't have the opening animation of DK destroying all the steel girders, which I thought was interesting. Like, they kind of get rid of the backstory,
right?
A little bit of the backstory, I should say, to it. Okay, so is there anything else that you wanted to talk about with Donkey Kong Jr.? Because I know this was something that, like, I was relying on your expertise for the original Donkey Kong. Both, neither of us know a whole lot about Donkey Kong Jr. other than, like, it was very different. I watched a playthrough of it. I thought all the levels were really interesting. The final level is really tough because the final level out of the four levels that end up repeating each other through all the various stages, you have, like, these 6 or 7 keys or something like that, and Junior has to push them up on the vines while dodging a shitload of enemies on screen.
Yes.
So you can be really bold and push 2 keys up at once, which is honestly really smart because you can get that done and out of the way with, but it still seemed really fucking difficult. There is a good variety overall from what I watched of this. I thought they had a really good variety between the 4 different levels that you could choose from. And it definitely was nowhere nearly as popular as Donkey Kong. I think it didn't even really supplant Donkey Kong, and obviously not a lot of people talk about it. And actually, there's one other thing I want to talk about Junior specifically before we end. But is there anything else that you wanted to say about this game?
I don't like Donkey Kong Jr. and I said that enough. It's just entirely too different, and the concept of it, I can't wrap my head around enough of it, because you're dodging birds, you're dodging eggs, you're dodging crocodile, fish, piranha things. And it's just so much. And it could be that I haven't been able to map or memorize the patterns for it. And I guess it isn't as popular, so there aren't as many resources to learn or to begin memorizing or watching other people play. Mm-hmm. And to be honest, I wouldn't want to invest that much time into it. I can't like it. When he's climbing up there and there's two birds that are flying at him, it's just where's a barrel? Just give me a barrel and I'll start throwing it around and everything's going to be fine. Okay, where's my gold hammer? I'm going to start whacking things. That's how I would play.
One quick thing, just thinking about like different competitive players for this. Steve Wiebe also played this and he eclipsed the original, I guess one of the first people to hit a million points in Donkey Kong Jr. was a guy named Icarus Hall in 2008. Okay. Steve Wiebe did surpass his points because it was like 1,033,000 was Icarus's high score. Steve Wiebe's was 1,139,800. The current world record is by a guy named Mark Keel, who has a score of 1,412,200.
Holy crap.
So it's pretty high up there. The last thing I wanted to say, though, was Nintendo, I found a YouTube video about this, and I thought it'd be kind of a fun topic to end Donkey Kong Jr. and kind of to end this episode on. Nintendo's treatment of Donkey Kong Jr. as a character, he is very much overlooked. Like, yes. He's kind of lost to history. I wrote down all the games that you can play as him in it.
Okay,
so
cool.
Besides Donkey Kong Jr., he has only really appeared in three other games, and one of those games is a port of, is kind of like a, they're kind of the same. He is playable in Super Mario Kart.
Uh-huh.
The original Super Mario Kart for the Super Nintendo. And he is playable in Mario Tennis for the N64 and Virtual Boy.
Wow.
Those are the only two other spots he appears in. Now, he appears as, like, you know, trophies and Smash Brothers and, like, kind of like, he appears in a lot of other different places in other games, but not playable. Those are the only playable versions of him outside of Donkey Kong Jr. Because it's not like he got his own game after that.
Right.
Or he got a different game after that. He was supposedly going to be in Donkey Kong Country, but because his model just looked so off, the Nintendo apparently made Rare cut him out of it. Either like use him, I think the model they used of him wasn't close enough to Nintendo's like branded model. So they're like, uh-huh, either you change it to this, or you create a whole new character. They ended up creating Diddy Kong, which I think was a smart choice. I mean, don't get me wrong, Donkey Kong Jr. is, he's Donkey Kong Jr., but Diddy Kong's fucking awesome.
Yeah, definitely. So, I mean, he's kind of been adopted into the Kong family. We can call him his son now.
Pretty much. And
his adopted son.
Well, they also talk, on the same video, they also talk about how, like, the chronology of Donkey Kong is very confusing, because in the first Donkey Kong Country, they talk about how Cranky Kong is Donkey's grandfather, and Cranky is the original Donkey Kong from the original, uh-huh, game. So Donkey Kong from Donkey Kong Country is his grandfather, which would technically mean that Donkey Kong Jr. is, ooh, Donkey Kong Country's dad, right?
Yeah.
But then later on in a different Donkey Kong Country game, they say Cranky Kong is Donkey's dad. So it's like they yank out Donkey Kong Jr. and it's like, no, Cranky Kong isn't Donkey's grandfather, it's just his dad. So it's like they kind of eliminate the Junior Donkey Kong Jr. in they eliminate Junior from the middle of it.
Mm-hmm.
And then later on they say he's his grandfather again. So it's like they don't give two shits about, you know.
Even
like,
that would almost, if they would keep it that way, it would make sense, because at the very beginning when he's doing the music, he's sitting on top of that red girder.
Mm-hmm.
So that's a good throwback to Nintendo has entire too many loopholes. If this is a television show, I would be very upset.
Donkey Kong isn't known for its in-depth storytelling, but it's still something fun to kind of just like goof around with, right? Junior also appears in Donkey Kong 94, the Game Boy game.
Okay.
He isn't playable, like I said, but he does appear with his dad, and he's like throwing barrels at you and stuff like that.
Aww.
So now, I have never played Donkey Kong 94, the Game Boy game, but everyone says it's a really amazing it's a remake, essentially. It's like a, it's so different from the original Donkey Kong, but apparently it's like really, really well done. Have you ever played it at all?
I have not played, but I have watched people stream it, and it is inspiring enough to make me want to play, because you have to, they do a little homage to the original Donkey Kong. So you have to play through a few levels of original Donkey Kong before you can get to the game itself. Mm-hmm. But the way that it's done, it's so cute, Game Boy way. Highly recommend it if you get the chance. And once you get onto the actual game itself, the concept changes a little bit, but there's still so many, you know, little Kong nuggets.
Mm-hmm.
Or what I call them, barrels. Would it be nuggets?
Kong nuggets.
little nods yeah. to DK throughout Donkey Kong 94. If you get the chance to play, or if you stream it, definitely let me know, because that's one that I like and I like to watch it.
I'm going to have to give it a shot then. But yeah, that's about all we got for this episode. Abby, seriously, thank you so much for joining me. This gives Donkey Kong a lot more of a service than I ever gave it. And like, we're going for an hour and 20 minutes right now, just about. I figure after I cut down some of the stuff I have to cut out, we're still like an hour 15, maybe hour. Like, we've already literally like quadrupled the amount of time I spent on the original episode, and this covers everything so much more. So I think I feel confident about this. I feel like we did a service to Donkey Kong for his 40th anniversary. Happy 40th, buddy. I don't know you. I wish you existed. Well, actually, you know what? I don't wish you existed, because then you'd be an angry monkey. But yeah. So Abby, where can the good people find you online, and is there anything you'd like to promote?
You can find me on Twitch at Dearest Abby, ABBY, and you can find me on Instagram at Dearest Abby, ABI. One of these days I might merge the two, but for now we'll keep them separate. Of course, I'll be plugging your podcast in all of the links in the description in my bio. I'm very happy to be here. I'm so excited. Thank you for having me on. It was fun talking about Donkey Kong and giving him the love that he deserves. I think it's an overlooked game, and giving attention to competitive players, especially competitive female players, I think it's something that we should encourage more of. And if anybody out there is listening that has their partner at home and they're interested in learning how to play, Donkey Kong might not be the best beginner game, but as soon as they get the hang of it, they're going to be hooked. Highly recommend it.
Well, I'm just happy to have you on, because I don't know a lot of people who know who... One, I don't know very many competitive gamers in the first place, but two, I don't know anyone who participates in arcade competitions, which is just, it's really cool to me. And I think, like, I still can't get over how bad my last episode was. I know I shouldn't, like, put, I got a review once saying, like, I shouldn't put myself down so much. I'm very happy with how much I've grown. It was a very fair review. Like, I'm not, that is not shade at the reviewer, because the dude was right. Like, I constantly belittled myself on the podcast, and that's not something people, understandably, people want to hear. So I'm very happy with how this turned out, and Donkey Kong fucking deserved it, man. Like, it's weird, because when you said not a lot of people know about this game, it's like, you're right and you're wrong at the same time. Like, it's the most important fucking game, one of the most important fucking games ever, but at the same time, nobody talks about it anymore.
Right. Like, whenever it was actually Donkey Kong's 40th, I kept chuckling because everyone was posting Donkey Kong Country pictures, and I had to just put my phone down for the day. And I was like, you're talking about the wrong thing. This isn't the thing. We need older than that.
It's not even at its 30th yet. It's got another 3 years before that. Before DKC hits 30.
But honestly, as long as he was getting the love and people were paying attention to it, that really, it did my heart good. But at the same time, I really just wanted to give people the education to know, like, listen, if you want to talk about a game and its roots, start at the beginning. And it's okay to not know. That's how we learn. We actually put forth the effort and we teach people things. And I think for anybody that heard about Donkey Kong's 40th, this will be their foot in the door for learning more about this pinnacle game in Nintendo's gaming history.
Mm-hmm. And it set so many, helped define the platformer genre. It helped add story to video games. It put Nintendo in a viable position in the West, which was If we didn't have Nintendo, I'm sure we would have had video games in some way, shape, or form later on, but we wouldn't have video games the way we know them today. That's for damn sure.
Absolutely.
So that should do it for this episode of the Still Loading Podcast. Thank you all for listening. As usual, you can follow me on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at Still Loading Pod on all of them. If you want to email me, you can email me stillloadingcontact@gmail.com. You can also support the show by giving it a 5-star rating and review on Apple Podcasts or whichever podcasting app you use. That helps more people find the show. If you want to support the show monetarily, you can go to patreon.com/stillloadingpod. Even just $1 a month will help grow the show. And the most important shout out slash thing I need to promote, not even need, that I want to promote, is the Bit by Bit Foundation. The Bit by Bit Foundation is a nonprofit organization whose mission is to put video games and video game consoles in the hands of kids receiving inpatient care at hospitals. So if you want to go support them, go to bitbybitfoundation.org and consider donating. And that will do it for this episode. Abby, seriously, thank you so much again for joining me.
It was my pleasure. Thank you for having me on. I look forward to listening.
And I will see you all next time.
Bye.